Fantasy sports and politics.
Let's get ready to rumble.
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics.
Hello, everyone. I do like that beat. It's not Mr. FSP. This is JT, a.k.a. the Master. And I am all alone today, doing my thing all by my little self on the FSP show. We got a great show in store for you. Not an hour and a half. We got a short hour. So we got a few things to go through. We got, I wouldn't say a disturbing, but a very disheartening and heartfelt thing took place last night to one of my favorite players that I like to watch in the NBA. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what's taking place this weekend, which started on Friday. The festivities started on basically on Friday. It's culminating several guys getting inducted into their Hall of Fame, the sport that they play in, the football. We're going to talk about mainly football in here. We're going to talk about, because on Sunday, besides the preseason game, the kickoff of the, in my opinion, the kickoff of the NFL season, fantasy and reality-wise, is the Hall of Fame game between the Buffalo Bills and the New York Giants, football Giants. We're going to be talking about on a master plan at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, along with my esteemed new co-host, Lance, Mr. NFL Exporter. We're going to be talking about tight ends. So there's things that are going to be intertwined between today and tomorrow that all relate to real football, quite naturally, and fantasy. And also, we're going to be talking about how the head man at some of these teams are going to dictate whether they have the players that they play for good fantasy seasons or questionable fantasy seasons. So I want to get into that too. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to me. And that's sponsored by the Fantasy Sportsbook and Casino.com. That's the hotline that you're calling in on. I do have a caller now, and I'll get to him in a minute. And also, we have a chat room. The chat room is always for your convenience. Lay your knowledge, ask a question, make a statement in that chat room. Whatever you want to get into it, we can get into it through the chat room if you like. It is what it is when you want it to be. And without further ado, let me bring in my esteemed caller here. I do know who my man is. I haven't talked to him in a while. So it's always a pleasure to have him come up on the airwaves. What's up, my man? How you doing there, Macau? How's it going?
What's up, Slim? How you doing?
All right. A lot of things going on in the sports world, man.
Whole lot. Please, let's get to all of it.
The Ray Rice thing, the the things that are taking place this weekend, and football's back on the forefront with the first preseason game going on, and then the Hall of Famers going in on today. But in my opinion, which is I saw it and I got to talk about it because he's one of my favorite players I like to watch. It's disheartening to me, and I feel for the brother. Hopefully, he's going to have a long road back from this devastating injury that he sustained yesterday. I'm talking about Paul George playing in a USA Team USA game, a scrimmage or whatever it is, an exhibition game. Came down and was I wouldn't say half Harley, but he was going up against James Harden on a breakaway, and after he tried to, I guess, block the shot, the stanchion that was the holding the basket up, which was not normally the same distance from the out of bounds line as it is in pro basketball, came down and snapped not one, but both his big bones on his lower leg in a gruesome injury that is shades of, and I can't remember the guy's name, that happened in college, and shades of Joe Theismann when he got his leg snapped, and shades of Lattimore, who now played for the San Francisco 49ers. All these guys come to mind about when they had their lower leg and how long. Some of them ruined their career. Some of them they were quite naturally never the same after that. And hopefully Paul George is going to be a long road back because those are some big bones that have to heal. And it takes a while to get that things back. I want to get your thoughts, man. I don't know if you saw it. I don't know if you saw a replay of it. I mean,
it's
pretty bad, man. What do you think? Give me your complete thoughts about what you saw and what you think his future holds.
I don't know what his future holds. It's really going to be up to him. But, you know, history say that, you know, you don't come back that much better from an injury like that. I mean, that joint looked real bad, man. It looked real, real bad. But, you know, it's going to call into question, you know, the whole plan for USA and not playing during the season and all that kind of carrying on. We're going to be back to that conversation pretty soon. So, I mean, I really feel bad for Younger because, you know, I like him. I really like him. He wasn't one of the dudes that had the heart on that team, but he sure enough didn't mind taking that shot or, you know, carrying that team on his back or whatever.
You know?
So I respect that a whole lot. And to me, I don't know about, you know, anybody else. To me, he virtually came out of nowhere. You know, he just stepped up. So
right.
I don't know, man. I hope everything turned out good for him, man.
Yeah, that was a when I saw that, man, it was you know how you watch something like that, your whole face like winces up and like ooh, like I mean you could feel it yourself because. It was that bad, like, and when they played it on TV, I'm not talking about playing the how he got the injury. I'm talking about the reaction of the players when they actually saw it. Like you can see Derrick Rose, he walked up, took two steps, maybe a half a step, saw it, turned around. And you can see the anguish on his face. Kevin Durant was visibly upset. All these players were extremely upset. I heard one report that when Kyrie Irving came out of the locker room, he broke down and started sobbing on his father's shoulders because he was so upset to what happened. I mean, these guys, from what I understand, are real tight. Not because they're just NBA players, but because they're playing on this team, and they a lot of these guys, most people don't know, interact quite a bit with each other in the off season, form very tight relationships. And when they see somebody like this, and Paul George is a good dude. I mean he appears to be a good dude.
He's a good dude. You're right.
Yeah.
He's a real good dude. He's not the type of dude that you want to throw hate or shade on. He's just a good dude, man.
Right. And you can see a lot of these guys, Cousins, I forget his first name. He was anguished. He was upset. It looked like he was about to break down in tears right on the court. And, you know, this is a guy that wears his emotions on his sleeve. He's a real tough guy, especially on the court. And a lot of people label him as a knucklehead, including myself. But when he saw something like this, he was, like, totally distraught. Didn't know how to – his emotions, quite naturally, they stopped the game immediately. Nobody was going but thinking about playing any basketball after that. You could see even Coach Krzyzewski on the court was distraught. And when he had a press conference after, was distraught because the fact is coaches and these players have formed a real close bond with each other, especially some of these guys that have been returning from year after year. And when you see somebody like this who's a good guy, puts his heart and soul in the game, and it's all about playing together and not just trying to showcase his individual talent, it's even that much more because you feel for the guy, because this could be a career ender, because you never know. If you've never been in that situation, and to break both legs, one leg is pretty hard on your lower leg to break, but to snap both legs is extremely hard, and it's a very devastating injury. And quite naturally, a pro athlete to play at a high level and a basketball player, you need to be able to have a quite naturally the use of your legs in most pro athletes, but the jumping and the kind of pounding,
agility and stuff.
You got to think that this is not a year injury. This is a Derrick Rose type of injury, and I'm not disparaging Derrick Rose, but I'm making the point as it for Derrick Rose to feel, because he was playing very well in this game, by the way, but we'll get to that. But for Derrick Rose to feel the way he is now and playing the way he is, carefree mentally in his mind, it took two seasons, not one. It took two seasons, and for Paul George, it may take, if things go well, it may take two seasons for him to mentally get over the fact that I'll be all right, my legs are okay, I can do the same things or try to do the same things I did before. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, man, it's going to take him a while to heal. It's going to take him a while to heal, man. Every time I think about I used to have, like, a different picture of him when I think of him. Now, I picture him going out on that stretch of slump. That's not good.
Yeah.
That's not good at all, man.
No. And so supposedly, he's supposed to stay in the hospital. Supposedly he had successful surgery on Friday night. He didn't have any additional damage to his ligaments, arteries, veins, or nerves. So he'll just need to focus on the recovery of his two bones. He'll miss the entire season next season.
Yeah.
That's no doubt about that.
He's missing at least two seasons. Wow. He's missing at least two.
Yeah, so you have to think, as long as ligaments, arteries, veins, or nerves, especially nerves, were damaged. It was just a clean break. If you could say the good comes out of it, the good that can come out of it. It was just a clean break.
Just a clean break. Yeah, that's good. He didn't have no none of them ligaments, you know, because them ligaments, man, especially in sport, you think them little things don't mean nothing for real, but when you look at them in the under X-ray, and then when you speak to the doctors about that, man, shoot. Oh, man, I remember when I popped my knee, that dude was talking about I needed to do this and this, and I was like, oh, man, I'm not playing no more. I'm done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man.
Is that right?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I was in high school with that.
B-ball or football?
Football.
Okay.
Football.
Wow. So you know firsthand about under injury that will shorten or just completely take you out of the game. Yeah?
Yeah. But see, these youngins are tougher than me. You know what I mean? I'm straight up. I can take a hit. You know what I'm saying? I get up or whatever, but, you know, you put a needle in me or you start showing me X-rays and telling me that this could happen to my body and stuff. Oh, no, I'm done. Now, you know, you can scare me that easy. Yeah, you can scare me that easily, Swell. That easy.
Wow. I would have never thought of you like that. I would have thought of you, I can push through this. I can come back from this. Give me straight.
In the moment, yeah. There, yeah. Once you get me in the doctor's office and the doctor starts showing me pictures of my knee and all the tendons and all like that and start telling me what could happen. Oh no, that's it for me, Slim. That's it. I ain't doing it. Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, sir.
If you don't mind me asking, what kind of injury did you sustain that caused you to hang it up?
Do I have to talk about it?
No, you don't. I can hear the hesitation. No. I'm not going to impress the issue. I just, like I said, you don't mind me. If you did, that's not a problem. I understand. All right, let's get to another guy. We're going to leave the NBA right for now because I want to talk about the NFL. And when I don't talk
please,
about it, I
yeah,
talk
let's
about,
get to this one, please.
I want to talk about Mr. Ray Rice, okay? I don't know if that's what you're talking about, but that's what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Now, this has been going on for and I'm going to intertwine Ray Rice and Stephen A. into this all because besides what happened to Ray Rice and the penalty that came down, Stephen A. commented on it about he got pulled into this firestorm and he was with some collateral damage from it also. So first I want to talk about Ray Rice and everyone that's involved in or out of the sports world knows about what happened to Ray Rice down in Atlantic City coming out of an elevator with his then fiance, now wife, completely limp and knocked the F out, and him dragging her out of the elevator. Speed up to a little bit more when he had a press conference, and it looked like I could be wrong, but and maybe this was just her demeanor because not being in front of the camera, she looked like she really didn't want to be there, and I want to say hesitant, but she was within in the press conference that he had with his now wife, talking about the things not completely, but just to try to clear the air with the press. Finally, we'll speed up a little more. the verdict came down, so to speak, from the NFL on what kind of penalty Ray Rice was going to incur, and that was just 2 games. And he was going to lose close to $300,000 to $500,000 in paycheck for playing those games, and then he would have to do some counseling and some other things in order for him to satisfy the legal system, and also I was supposed to satisfy the NFL. Okay, 2 games for knocking your then fiance, now since they married, wife out. Okay, let me put it this way, and I'm not saying it didn't happen, but the only footage that we anybody has seen was him dragging her out of the elevator. Besides that, 2 games, and Ray Rice will speed up a little bit more. Had a press conference a few days ago, and I'm gonna play the press conference, and I'm gonna come back, and I'm gonna talk to Mikel about Ray Rice, Roger Goodell, the NFL, and Stephen A. We'll be right back.
At night, you know, I just replay over and over in my head. You know, that's not me. My actions were inexcusable, and you know, that's something I have to live for the rest of my life. And you know, the pain that I'm talking about living with is waking up every day, and my daughter's 2 years old now. You know, I have a little girl who's very smart, very intelligent, and one day she's going to know the power of Google, and me have to explain that to her, you know, what happened that night. I know that's not who I am as a man. You know, that's not who I am as a man. That's not who my mom raised me to be. If anybody knows me and knows me, that they know I was raised by a single parent, and that was my mother. And you know, to sit here today and, you know, replay the things that, you know, my mom raised me to be, you know, I let her down. I let my wife down. You know, I let my daughter down. You know, I let my wife's parents down. I let the whole Baltimore community down. And I got my teammates here supporting me. I let my teammates down. You know, I let so many people down because of 30 seconds of my life that, you know, I know I can't take back. But one thing that I wanted to do today was, you know, apologize to my wife, who I've known since high school. I've known her since a kid. You know, I met her in high school, and she's the same girl now that she is. Great mother, and she's a great wife. Today, I know you guys' job is here to report my highest highs and lowest lows, but my lowest low, I made a huge mistake, and I want to own it. I want to sit here in front of my teammates and tell you I made a huge mistake. You know, these 2 games are going to hurt.
Okay, before I get bring Mikel in, I'm going to say this because I want to say this. In the first press conference, which took place a few weeks ago, with Ray Rice and his wife sitting on the podium talking, Ray Rice apologized to everyone, like he did here, except his wife. Okay? He didn't apologize for the first press conference with his wife. Okay. This press conference, he apologized to his wife. And for those who didn't know, his wife was present. Even though you didn't see her sitting, standing next to him, his wife was in behind the cameras in a different spot where she could hear the press conference and see her husband. And he apologized to her publicly. Besides all the times that he probably apologized to her privately, he apologized. I made up for another mistake that he didn't do the first time when she was sitting next to him. Also, I don't know if a lot of people didn't know, all his teammates or majority of his teammates, because you didn't see him because you only saw Ray Rice in front of the camera, but you didn't see what was happening behind the camera, all his teammates were showing their solidarity with him behind the camera and were there after the press conference. So he got 2 games. And I'm not going to say anything else, okay? Until I talk to Macau, because I want to hear his thoughts on it. And also, I'm pretty sure if anybody who's attuned to the sports world has seen what took place after the verdict of Ray Rice came down, and the things that Stephen A. said the first time, and then the firestorm he in Twitter that he created, and then him come in with, especially with one of his co-workers, Michelle Beadle, and then after that, him coming back on the air and apologizing for the comments he made previously before that. And also then him getting subsequently suspended for saying the comments. There's a lot going on here. And then Goodell talked briefly about the punishment at the Hall of Fame ceremonies. More than likely he's going to get another opportunity. Someone's going to pull him off and get a one-on-one interview and talk about it a little bit more. But without further ado, I've laid a lot out here. I may have missed a few points, but I basically gave you the crux of what is happening in here. And I really wanted to get Macau's thoughts completely. You have as much time as you want to take. It's your floor.
You know what, Jerry? This is almost like I can't remember like a time when I have really felt this way about Roger Goodell. I truthfully thought he got it right this time. I really thought he got it right this time. I mean, two games, and this dude's gonna be out of pocket of like $400,000. You know,
right.
And we're still talking about it, and it's still going on. But see, here's the crazy thing about it. There's nothing that the NFL can do, the judicial system can do to help justify what he did. It can never be justified. Even if he gave him five games, it still don't justify what happened. If they put him out a year, it still doesn't justify what happened. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I really think that the two games was enough. You know what I mean? This whole thing with Michelle Beadle and Stephen A., man, that's just ridiculous. That's just ridiculous and gone way, way awry so bad that it doesn't even make any kind of logical sense. Right?
Well, let me interrupt you for a minute, because I don't know if you know this or not, and I didn't know it until I listened to a blog with Michael Smith, Jemele Hill, and I forget the woman that's on First Take, the black woman. I forget her name.
Capri something. I forgot her name.
Yeah, go ahead. They were all on a blog, and I listened to this blog, and because I like listening to Jemele Hill and Michael Smith, and Michelle Beadle, and I think this is the reason why it hit hard and why she really was upset about it, was in a very abusive relationship, and so was able to relate to this firsthand, okay? And for the comments that Stephen A. made, it hit home because the fact is she had experienced something that. So I just wanted to put that in there. I don't know if it made a difference in your opinion, but I just wanted to put that in there.
If you didn't know or not. No, it doesn't make a difference. I mean, because I think she's being extremely obtuse about it.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and you can, there is, when you put out a message, right, when you put out a message and you've gone through something, you know, like this, you have to put a message out for both sides of the table. You know what I mean? Because every time, I mean, I understand she didn't like the fact that, you know, Stephen A's talking about women that provoke men or whatever. I totally get where she's coming from. But guess what, sweetie? Guess what, sugar? It happens. It happens. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying it's all the time or all, you know, in all situations, but, dude, there's a lot of things out here that's off the chain. Now, I'm not saying that that's what happened with Ray Rice's wife, and that doesn't justify it, but look, it has gone way out of control. And there's nothing that anybody can do that can console her. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying. She's being extremely obtuse. Obtuse. It's crazy. It's crazy. Her situation and Ray Rice's situation are two different things. That man and his wife, they going through what they going through, you know what I'm saying? And she went through what she went through with hers or whatever. That's her situation, and this is their situation. This is how they choosing to handle it. You know what I mean? They got the two games or whatever. Stephen A. Smith has been saying crazy stuff for a long time. A whole bunch of slightly chauvinistic remarks he's been saying for years and years and years. It's nothing new. We knew exactly what he was saying. But see, again, it goes back to what I was saying. When you're putting out a message, you got to have enough for the whole table.
Right.
Stephen didn't do that. You know what I mean? I thought it was kind of odd when I was first listening to it. I was like, he might get hit up for this.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
But I didn't think it was because, you know, he said things like this before. You know what I mean? Not that it's like bad or messed up or whatever. It's just that he said things like this before. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. But here's the crazy part. They pay him to give his comments. They pay him to give his opinion. And now they go suspend him? Get out of here, man. This is crazy beyond belief. This has gone ridiculous. You know what? This whole Ray Rice and Stephen A. Smith thing has bad timing because there's nothing going on. There's nothing going on. We don't got no soccer. We don't got no golf. We don't got tennis. We don't got no football. We don't have nothing else to get the news to move on, man. And it seems like this society, we have a serious problem of, like, really looking at things with, you know, good perspective and then moving on. It's like we got to go through this long turnout process. I mean, the man's whole team was there. You know, his wife was there. He had to publicly apologize to his wife. And really, he need to be apologizing to her at home, you know what I mean, and straighten out home and not doing it in public, but you got to do everything in public. This stuff has become a circus so bad, Jerry, that it's almost surreal just to watch this stuff play out like this. And, you know, like I said, you know, it's not like I don't recognize the problems in domestic violence. Very much so. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I have a friend that's going through something right now, she call me right now, I'll come over there and handle that. You know what I'm saying? And I know I can probably come get you and we'll go take care of that. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean? Because I'm not going to have that type of stuff going on in my house or whatever. I'm not. But at the same time, you got to understand these beasts that you out here with. And this is what kills me about certain women. They don't recognize the law of the jungle, Jerry. Like me, I'm 5'10", 190 pounds. There's a reason why I won't go up to a 6'10", 300-pound dude and start my power pattern. It's the reason that I won't do that.
Yeah, I hate to laugh, but you're right.
It's a reason.
I hate
I won't
to laugh, but
that.
You are right.
You know what I'm saying? There's a reason. And I'm not saying that, you know, women do this, right? But if you conduct yourself in a manner to keep yourself away from that stuff, chances are the stuff won't happen. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It'll help you more in the long run. But, you know, I know dudes is off the chain just like women off the chain. People are all off the chain. So everybody
right.
has to be on guard. And if you're mm-hmm. not, you know what I'm saying? And if you go feed into it, guess what? You're going to get bit. You're going to get bit. It's just that simple.
Well, I've witnessed it firsthand, had to step in a few times to prevent things happening. Trust me. This hit home more than once, and you have no idea, and I don't really want to relay it on public airs of the things that I have seen and had to step in to diffuse for the simple fact that physically at sometimes, because the fact is it was off the hook, off the chain. So,
Jerry, I got phone calls to come stepped into some stuff, broke up some stuff, got into a fight with the dude or whatever, and then she won't fight me too because I was fighting him to get her on.
Yep.
I mean, it's just crazy, man. It's crazy out here now, man. So,
yeah.
I mean, all I'm saying is this, man. Just do what you got to do to defuse or walk away. If a dude is gawking at you, shawty, just walk the other way, please. I mean, because it's the reason I do the same thing, man. If I'm walking in the neighborhood, if I'm in a certain hood or whatever, I know the rules. If them dudes over there cutting up, guess what? I'm going the other way. You know what I mean? I'm going the other way.
Right.
Because
exactly.
I don't want no drama. I don't want to start nothing. I don't want to be in the middle of it. If they bring it to me, I'm going to have to handle it, but I'm going to try to get away. Period, point blank. I'm trying to get away.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say it's a touchy subject, and there's a lot of different fingers.
It's real touchy.
And it's a lot of different fingers and a lot of different perspectives you can go to. I don't know if you heard what Whoopi Goldberg said, and she's catching flack for what she said. So,
there's a lot of what she said
and what you were saying. So,
the difference between what Whoopi's saying and what I'm saying, there's absolutely no justification for a man to hit a woman. Absolutely not. I don't care what she did or what happened or whatever. You know what I mean? There's no justification. No, he should not do it. A man should walk away, right? But even though I'm saying that, it don't mean that he won't.
Right. And then there's this is not my philosophy at all, because I agree with you, under no circumstances should that happen. But there's this, and I think I read this somewhere, and I also know this, that there are some females that, because they know, they more or less hold the power, that if a man hits them, they'll take it to as far as they can take it, because they figure that once he puts his hands on me, I got him. So they're going to take it as far as to extremes, because they figure they have the power to do that without any repercussion on their side.
And you know what? That's breeding. That's breeding this type of thinking right here. You know what I mean? This is what you're thinking is, and I hope a woman is listening. Okay. If I'm going to jail, I might as well wear your ass out.
Yep.
If I'm going to jail, I might as well get all that I can get out of it, so I can feel good right now.
But you're right.
It's the same thinking that you had when you was a kid, right? If you knew that you were supposed to be home at 12 o'clock, right? And it's like 12:30, and you on the way home, you're like, man, I might as well stay out because I'm gonna be in trouble anyway. So
right.
forget it. I'm just going to stay out some more. That's the same thing. You know, if he done popped you once, and And then you still going. He might as well wear your ass out some more. He might as well do it. You know what I mean? He might as well do it. Because you're going to get the same amount of time. You might as well go. You might as well go. But I don't condone any of that stuff, man. I don't like any of that. I don't like any of that drama. You know what I'm saying? I know I sound like I got a whole lot of rah-rah, but my house is quiet. It's peaceful.
Right.
I don't like a whole lot. You know, I don't like a bunch of confusion. You know what I mean? And I can't take all that stuff. I can't do it. Mm-mm. Absurd.
I hear you. Well, I'm going to go off the beaten path here now, man, because we're going to be talking about the world of golf, believe it or not. And I'm reading this story,
oh, yeah.
And I can't believe this story.
Messy. Oh my God! Let me
tell you, people, the world of golf has joined the days of our lives. General Hospital, the soap opera world. Because I'm reading a story about Dustin Johnson, the golf star, who got banned from. Now, first of all, it came out that Dustin Johnson was leaving, taking a leave of absence from the PGA and pro golf tour. Well, now it's that golf star Dustin Johnson was hit with a six month ban from the PGA tour after testing positive for cocaine. Now, this is a golfer, people, but let me expound a little bit more on this story. Johnson is said to have had two affairs with wives of PGA Tour players, including one that allegedly broke up the marriage of one tour player. Twitter was abuzz with details of that bust-up, which was allegedly posted by the ex-wife of the player, who said she and her husband were separated when the alleged tryst occurred. According to the report, it was the third strike for Johnson. He's ranked 16th in the world and eight-time winner. He tested positive for marijuana in 2009 and cocaine in 2010. My man seems to be, besides being a player on the green or on the course, he seems to be a player off the course also. I don't know if you heard about this story or just caught part of it, but this
I just caught, let me put it this way, I just have to say wow. I just caught part of this story, but the PGA is about to get busted wide open, Slim. Wide open. Like, I mean, just think about it. You know, for you and the rest of the listeners, when is the last time that you heard about a golfer, like, testing positive for a banned substance? When have you ever heard that? You ever heard of a golfer being pulled over for a DUI or DWI? Any of that stuff?
Right.
You don't hear any of that stuff. You know, when was the last time you heard of a golfer being fined by the PGA? You don't hardly hear that. You know why? Because they don't advertise. They don't put it out there like the NFL does or the NBA does. They don't put it out there. The only way that you'll know that the golfer got fined is if the golfer goes into a report and says that, you know, I got fined or whatever. You know what I mean? They don't tell it. Right? DJ Singh right now has a lawsuit going against the PGA. So, and if they get that, if the stuff that's in that lawsuit gets out, the PGA is going to be open season on them, Slim. You're going to be like, oh my goodness, what in the world are these dudes doing?
Really?
They are off the chain. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It is a
well, inform me, because I'm not sure of I don't know. So inform me if you can.
I don't know too much about it. I was listening to a blog and they were talking about it, and they were really hammering in on the PGA, you know, and they asked the same questions I asked and said the same things I just said. But they didn't really get into, you know, the nuts and bolts as to why. But apparently Vijay Singh has, you know, a problem with how the PGA has been, you know, conducting themselves with him over the years or whatever. And there's some type of beef with it. So he's trying to get it all brought out. He's trying to put it all out there. He's going ham on him, Jerry.
Really? Okay.
Yes, sir.
Is this got to do with a little bit of the old boys network?
Yeah, old boys network. But they've been like protecting their brand a whole lot better than like the NFL and the NBA and the MLB. You know, they've been keeping everything quiet. You know, and they've been able to get away with it, but they're not going to be able to get away with it but for so long now. Now with this dude that you're talking about in Vijay Singh suit, oh my goodness. It's about to get real messy. It's going to be real messy, trust me. But by the wintertime, it's going to be real messy with the PGA. Real messy.
Wow. Well, you know, that's the PGA for the most part. Has been, how can I say, catering to the certain clientele, and for the most part, that clientele and the surroundings around the PGA have kept a tight lip and a tight lid on the seedy things that have been that may have been happening for years. And this Dustin Johnson, and now you tell me this Vijay Singh thing, it's going to put golf in the same light or change the perception of golf and make it more in line with the, I wouldn't say just completely, but more in line with the other major pro sports, as in baseball, football, basketball, that has their own issues with their pro athletes, whether it's on the court or on the course, for this matter, or off the course, or off the court, or off the field, so to speak. So the bloom is off, supposedly, or it's going to be off, of the rose, which is the golf world. Because this completely, and you surprised me with Vijay Singh thing, but this completely was like, are you kidding me? A golfer? And supposedly this guy is a hard partier, and supposed to be engaged to Paulina Gretzky's.
What's that golfer's name that they used to make fun of? The one that used to smoke and drink and stuff like that and play golf and was real fat.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes, I know exactly who you're talking about. I can't remember his name.
He sounds like Paul for the course to me now, Slim.
Right. Right. And he was looked at it. He was looked at in at a different light. Than this guy, and this guy, he seemed like a loose cannon for quite a while, and they finally had to rein him in a little bit. Who knows if this is going to change him? But
right, and then when you think about it, you think of how Tiger was cutting up. Tiger was
right.
cutting up, well,
right.
He was
right.
cutting up. Come on, man. Come on, man.
Yeah, this guy, Wayne Gretzky's daughter, is supposedly engaged with this guy. We'll see what happens. I mean, it is what it is, man. I mean, like I said, it caught me by surprise for the last few days when I found out about it or heard about it and reading about it. I'm saying, wow, this guy is it looks like he's a straight out of a at least let me put it this way. His perception is that you see him on a golf course, and most golfers, you think they leave a pretty sedate life. They don't do too much. They really concentrate on their craft, which is playing golf, and are family guys. That's really what the perception of a lot of golfers are. They're family guys. They're down to earth. They don't do too much off the course. Well, this has totally blown that completely out of the water. Just like you said, in the next few months, going into next year, the perception of golfers is going to change greatly due to this, because I've never heard of a golfer until I read this story being out there. And he's out there. He was out there, way out there. So, we'll have to wait and see what happens. I'm looking forward to what you told me about this VJ's thing, lawsuit, and to see what kind of resolution and what kind of a story will come out after everything's been completed. All right, we got less than 9 minutes left in the show because I'm not doing an hour and a half. I'm doing only an hour here. I want to talk about this, okay? We're going to transition right back to football because
I hope it's what I think it is.
What, the Hall of Fame?
Nah, the cowgirls, but go ahead.
Okay, well, wait a minute. This is something I don't know about, and you give me the info, and I'll try to run with it, or you tell me what's going on with the cowgirls, the Cowboys?
Yeah, the Cowboys. Have done something very unique with their front office and their season ticket holders. They are giving out along with the season tickets. They're giving out playoff games and an NFC championship game. That's if it's going to be played at Texas Stadium.
How in the world? Where does the team get off pushing out playoff tickets and NFC championship tickets when for the last at least two seasons, maybe three seasons, they've gotten to 500 and won one playoff game under the quarterback they presently have. One playoff game. I don't get it. Jerry Jones, and I hate to say it like this, and I really hate to say it like this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Sounds like he joined the ranks of Pat Bowlen from the Denver Broncos and lost his damn mind and forgot what took place in the past years. And thinking that he's got a championship team that he runs, it ain't happening. They'd be surprised if they hit 8-8 this year with a quarterback that you don't know if you're going to get a full season out of, and a defense that was ranked 32nd out of 32 teams last year and lost some key pieces to it this past offseason and just lost a defensive lineman to a broken foot for at least half the season. Talk to me, Mikel. I do not get this.
I mean, well, Jerry, I think, like, you know, strictly looking at it from a football perspective and as a fan and as a spectator, this is ludicrous. You know what I mean? It's just it really is when you look at it that way. But, however, looking at it from a business perspective, this is ingenious. It's ingenious.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't know if you know, but a lot of NFL teams have a very hard time selling tickets for the playoff game. Once the team gets in the playoff, like especially like the first week, terrible. It's horrible. It's almost just like crazy. They It's like they've got to, like, call in corporate sponsors a whole lot more. I mean, the Packers, they didn't sell out one of those games that they played in the playoffs last year.
Right,
You know what I mean? So, you know, it's pretty rough, right? You know, and also looking at it from a business perspective, if let's say, you know, you buy season tickets and they, you know, I'm just putting out a number, they $5,000, right?
Right.
Now, as the as the team, I could jack that price up now. I could jack it up to $7,000 and say, you know, you're getting season tickets, and you know, if we go to the playoffs, you already got your tickets. It's already sold. You're already in. You know what I'm saying? And if we go to the championship, you're already in. You know what I mean? You don't have to get on a waiting list. You don't have to do any of that stuff. Oh man, it's ingenious as far as business wise. But you know, like I said, strictly looking at it from football, it's crazy. But the offset isn't that bad, because if you think about it, like the NFL normally has, you know, players that goes from team to team or whatever. And, you know, the fans will buy the jersey or whatever. You know, I mean, I know that there are a gang of, what's his name, number 94, DeMarcus Ware. There are plenty of Ware jerseys out there that's Cowboy jerseys. But now he plays for the Broncos. You know, what happens to those jerseys? Is people still wear them? You know, do they still sell them? I mean, it's this type of stuff goes on. So them putting out there, you know, in the beginning of the year, you know, when everybody's record is 0-0, that they could possibly go to the NFC Championship, it's ingenious. Because you don't lose anything. You don't lose anything. You absolutely don't lose anything. And you shore up all of your problems. You shore up all your issues. You don't. You have less issues with, like, the, you know, the waiting list. You have less issues trying to figure out who, if these people going to come or if they're going to show or not, because you already sold them out. You already gave them out. So, you know, that's all. I don't think he's off his rocker as far as you would think he is, Mike. Straight up. And do not be surprised. Don't be surprised if you see other teams follow suit.
Okay. All right. Well, I was looking at a perspective that the way his team's been performing for the last few years.
Exactly.
And
I got you.
Why would you do that? But from the business standpoint, sure, it's a great move, because the fact is you're almost assured to get a if you do make the playoffs, that you're going to have a nice crowd, if not sold out crowd, coming to those games, and not having to fight for tickets or spend that extra money for tickets because they already have them. So I understand that.
Yep.
Anyway, got a short time, but I mean, if we go over, we go over, because I wanted to talk about these guys: Claude Humphrey, Walter Jones, Andre Reed, Michael Strahan, Enos Williams, Derek Brooks, and last and definitely not least, the best punter that I have, and it's a punter I have ever seen, and a game changer for no doubt, because his extreme skill of what he could do punting the football, Ray Guy. Derek Brooks, who's never missed a game during his 14-season career, which is unbelievable for a football player, especially in the position he played in, linebacker position. That's unheard of. You got Claude Humphrey, Walter Jones, who's a lineman for Seattle, Andre Reed, who was Mr. Money for the Buffalo Bills, even though they never won a Super Bowl. They went to 4 straight Super Bowls, and he happened to be one of those Fab Three, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, and Andre Reed. Michael Strahan, who broke the single season record with 22.5 sacks. Enos Williams, who was a terror as a safety, playing for the Cardinals and the Rams. I mean, this is a stellar class going in here, and I want to get you get me your thoughts on these guys that are 2014 Hall of Fame class.
Let me say this, man. And I do respect the dude, but I can't stand Michael Strahan-Sloan. I can't stand that dude. I was stubborn in his face. But you know what? He was a beast on the field, man. He really was. You know, I think he's, you know, he should get his due or whatever. But the man on here that I am really impressed with and I'm really happy for him is Andre Reed. Andre Reed was a cold beast, man. He was a cold beast. He was clutch. The dude went across the middle. He had no problem jumping up in the middle, high balls, low balls, whatever. He just went to work, man. I mean, he is like on my list of receivers, he's definitely top five because he had a gang of heart, man. He wasn't like the fastest. He didn't jump the highest. You know what I mean? And he I wouldn't even say he ran the routes better, but he just always showed up when they needed him. It was like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, like all of a sudden, Kelly would drop back over the middle to Reed down the mile, sidelines, he gone. You know what I mean? It would be like that all the time. All the time. Or then there would be games where they would just do nothing but throw to him. I mean, the dude would have like 9 catches in a game or something. He was nice, man. He was really, really, really nice. And I am really happy. It took them way too long to get this dude in there. He should have been in there at least 5-6 years ago, man. Seriously.
I totally agree with you, but unfortunately, and I think they I don't know why, but they have a, and I hate to say it like this, but I'm gonna say it, a quota on the position of each year of what players get in there. And it seems like they only usually put one receiver in, and you got a bunch load of Hall of Fame caliber receivers that have been waiting to get in. And you're right, man. When I was a Jet fan, I hated to see the Buffalo Bills and that red gun offense, Thurman Thomas and Jim Kelly, and especially Andre Reed. Because, like you said, he had a ton of heart, not the biggest and fastest wide receiver, but going over the middle, no problem. Taking the deep ball down the sidelines, no problem. Throw me the ball. I don't care where it's at. It's my ball. I'm going for it. You're right. It was totally too long. And it totally was unnecessary, in my opinion, that Andre Reed had to wait this long to finally get into the NFL Hall of Fame. And the thing, and the heartfelt thing about this, his quarterback, who's going through some trial and tribulations now, dealing with the dreaded disease of cancer, is going to be in the audience. When Andre Reed steps up and gives his speech, that's probably going to be one of the most emotional times in the induction when those two guys are face to face in the audience and for all the world to see the type of camaraderie and closeness these guys have. Because what they endured on and off the field.
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah, I'm here. Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Those two dudes, man. They just lit it up, man. I've always liked Jim Kelly. I've always liked Jim Kelly for a long time, man. And it's, you know, it's really sad what he's going through, but. Yeah, man. Reed should have been in there a long time ago. Another thing too, man. I really think they need to rethink how they do this Hall of Fame, man. I'm just baffled as to why sports writers are electing who goes into the Hall of Fame, man. I don't think that's fair at all. I think it should be just strictly players, man. I think the players should do that. You know what I mean? Because they know.
Yeah.
They all know, man. They know. They know
yep.
what time it is. I think, I don't know. I don't like the whole sports writers thing because they just get these petty beefs or just be real petty about certain stats or whatever. And ain't name one of these dudes strapped on a helmet and played in the NFL, man.
Yep.
Ain't none of them played. None of them.
Yep. I have to totally agree with you. I don't get it why the sports writers dictate who gets into the Hall of Fame. And it's not just the football. I'm talking about sports writers in baseball that do the same kind of garbage.
Exactly, man.
And it could be regional. It could be a personal beef, like you said, or just a dislike because the guy wasn't friendly with the press or didn't give interviews or friendly interviews that they would hold it against him. It would be unfair, whether it's baseball, especially now we're talking about football, that these writers carry that type of baggage, in my opinion, even though they may not say that. Of course, they're not going to say that, and dictate who happens to go in there. And it doesn't happen often. I think it's only happened once a few times. Not that maybe a handful of times since the Hall of Fame induction has been going around that they push more than one position. Let me put it this way. A person that has the same position and it's multiple positions of the same person that goes into the Hall of Fame. Usually they pick out a defensive lineman, a linebacker, a DB, a wide receiver, and something like that. It's a special teams player. Now, you notice in none of these guys is there a coach or an owner. All these guys are players. So that's something different this year. Next year could be something unique. They could add an owner. They could add a coach into the group that goes into the 2015 Hall of Fame. But all these guys I'm looking at are well-deserved. Some of them took too long. Ray Guy, man, you think Andre Reed took long? Ray Guy was even longer, man. This guy was playing way back in his 70s. I'm telling you, I used to watch Ray Guy, and he was a total truth. Ray Guy was an athletic, if you can say it, he was a very athletic punter, and helped all those teams that played when he played for the Raiders because of the way that he could change the game with field position because he had that much of a control of the ball and had pinpoint punting and put his defense in a great position in order for the offense to get his offense to get the ball back because where he put the ball. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Ray Guy was.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I think he was how I learned about special teams. For real.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Like, you know how, like, punters now, like, aim the football down in between the five-yard line, right on the corner, right over there near the power line and all like that?
Right, right.
Ray Guy was the first one doing all that stuff, man. And
right.
It's like, you know, I remember a time before that, you know, they wasn't doing that. But then when he started doing it and I started paying attention to it, and I didn't realize until I got older that he was the one that, you know, that was doing that stuff. You know what I mean? And
yep.
all these other
yep.
punters was emulating him. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, it's been a long time for him, too. Real long time.
All right, we come to the end of the show, man. I really appreciate you calling in and spreading the knowledge that you have, man, and give me your opinion on a few things that I want to talk about. And I'm going to give you an opportunity because we're at the end of this show. to give me whatever you got before I close this show out, and I'll give you whatever time you need.
Oh, man, I done gave you everything I had today, so I ain't had nothing else. I can't even think of anything else that's going on. But, yeah, man, no problem. I appreciate you having me on here. And, you know, we how we chop it up. We chop it up good every time.
Oh, yeah.
You'll be on here tomorrow, or you going to take it off tomorrow?
No, I'll tune in tomorrow because I'll be here at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I have a co-host now. He calls himself the NFL Exporter. We'll be chopping it up about in fantasy football. We'll be talking about tight ends. 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It'll be me on a master plan with Mr. NFL Exporter. We're going to be talking about fantasy from here on until the end of the season. In fact, we'll probably be talking about it year-round. From the guy I got here, I think he's pretty knowledgeable. I think he'll be cutting up pretty good. So for those of you who are listening, for those of you who catch us in the archives, tune in next week, same time, same place, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on a Saturday. Be Mr. FSP. He should be back next week along with me, co-hosting it out as always. Like I said, tune in tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're at a master plan. We'll be talking about fantasy football, especially or exclusively talking about tight ends pertaining to fantasy football. And also on Thursday, 8 p.m., as always, we've been doing it for years. We're going to be doing it next Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Will be the FSP Crew Show. I'll be the host of that show along with Black and Jeff as my two co-hosts. We'll be chopping it up. We're talking about the NFL preseason games. They're going to be kicking off all the time now because Sunday's the first preseason game, the Hall of Fame game with the Bills and the New York Giants. So we'll be chopping it up, talking about all kinds of things related to fantasy and sports. With that being said, Macau, enjoy the rest of the weekend. Don't get too crazy out there, but have a good time like I will. And for those people, also do the same thing. Have a good time. What did you say?
I say you too, sir. Hey, my bike.
All right, my man.
My bike, Slump.
With that being said, tune in next week and enjoy the weekend, and we gone.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy, sports, and politics. Fantasy.